Hey everyone, this is a bit of a different podcast today. I just saw on Instagram stories a friend of mine, Bisma, who I talked to a couple of weeks ago now about her Lennon for All clothing company. I saw that she's having a bit of a rough time, so I asked her if it's cool if I call her for the show. So let's see if she's around. Bisma, hey.
Hey, how's it going?
It's all right. I just saw your stories.
Yes. I would definitely say it's a different mood than the last time we spoke, for sure.
Yeah. So I saw that you touched on a few things. Where should we start? So I saw that you were saying how you're having a hard time with your sort of mental well-being, let's say, and that's a broad brush.
Yeah, definitely. I would say my mental health is definitely struggling. It's something that I've never shied away from in the past. All my speaking and, you know, my mental health advocacy is exactly for this purpose. It's not just to spread awareness, but it's also to recognize when it's happening to you and when, you know, when I need to take some time for my own mental health just to recover or check in.
Yeah, so I mean, do you want to get into specifics? Like, why do you think you're having a hard time?
So I would say right now, I wouldn't say that anyone is having a great time.
Fair enough.
I would say everyone's struggling to some degree for a variety of different reasons. And obviously, I was saying, you know, on the Instagram story that I'm coming from a unique lens of first world problems and definite privilege. And I have to acknowledge that, but that doesn't mean that my feelings and what I'm struggling with don't exist. And for me personally right now, I'm just feeling this overwhelming sense of helplessness because I feel that no matter what I'm doing, I don't see tangible results. Or maybe I just don't see the types of results I'm really valuing right now. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I said was, for example, with COVID, I know for a fact that I'm doing everything I can. I keep using the term, like, I'm doing my best, not necessarily the best, but my best. I've been self-isolating since last year. I got vaccinated. So I know on the COVID front, you know, I'm doing my best. When it comes to the global state of the world and the genocide against Palestine, I don't think I'm doing my best. This is a situation that has been going on for decades, and I have been actively doing my part to, you know, boycott certain organizations, bring awareness to certain causes, and I don't feel like anything's happening. Same thing with my clients. You know, we've built out these incredible brands, and because of COVID, other stores and wholesale deals are falling apart because no one wants to take on extra product, and I understand, but I feel so helpless right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how you kind of span between things that are in your immediate reach to global problems, where as one person you couldn't possibly be able to do anything. It's like, I don't know, I mean, no disrespect, but it was like an ant complaining that it's raining. Like, what in the world do you think you're going to do about it? And though the cause is incredibly worthwhile, I think sort of destroying yourself and making yourself so stressed because you're not making a difference to something that it's sort of a governmental huge superpower issue that only they can do, really, like hurting yourself about it and just driving yourself up the balls is going to make zero difference to anything.
Yeah, and I feel like that's where we need to make the differentiation. Like, it's great that, you know, the world is putting certain pressures on governments to change and enact change. Mm-hmm. But I feel like when it comes to specifically, obviously, like our mental health, we need to be realistic about what we can and can't control. And I think that's the first step for me, realizing what I have control over and what I can do something about and what I can't, or what I can't make as impactful of a difference about. Like right now, yeah. I think my best, again, the difference between the best and my best right now is I can raise awareness. I can educate people. I can do these things, but I'm not in a position to be creating policy and legislature, and you know, that's not in my wheelhouse of things.
Yeah.
So I have to keep it real. I have to figure out what I can do and how I can do it to feel less helpless.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I don't know, I'm just sort of picturing a kind of diagram. You know how, you know, they say journaling is a good thing to do and write down your thoughts or whatever. But I think sort of coming up with like a diagram of concentric circles. So you start off with you in the middle, and then you've got a smaller circle and a slightly bigger and a bigger and a bigger. And so the things directly around you, you can change, mm-hmm. and you have an impact on. The things that are, let's say, your clients are the next ring. So you can help nudge, but ultimately it's a sort of world situations where we kind of have to wait it out right now. And then there's the big ring that's probably bigger than the whole book, and you can not touch it. Like, it's nothing to do with you. It's a horrible situation, the Palestine thing, which I admittedly don't understand the whole situation. So if you want to tell me, I'd appreciate it. But I think, like, even with your clients and things, I know that they value you and you value them. And I'm sure that you've done incredible work with them, getting to them to where they are. But ultimately, it's another world situation where we just have to wait it out, and we can sort of plan for the future and start, you know, it's a really difficult, and it is a helpless situation right now. Like, I appreciate what you're doing with isolating to help slow the spread of COVID. We've been doing the same, and it's infuriating to see people at the park with no masks on and having parties and being arrested on TV for having a nightclub in their penthouse suite because they think it's fine. It's like, why am I feel like I'm being punished so that you can just run around, and not you, I mean these people on TV, mm-hmm. or at the park, so that you can run around and do what you like. And it's not fair. And none of this is fair. But then, is anything fair? Like, who... I mean, this is a widely existential conversation.
Right, exactly.
Like, what's right, what's wrong, and what's fair? Like, do they even match?
And I think it's not even a metric we can really measure. And I think that it's, at the end of the day, you just have to look at, okay, this is me, this is my situation, this is what's happening right now. And as long as that sounds like a very selfish answer, but really it's helping on a broader scale. Because if I think about why I'm self-isolating, for example, and why I'm not going to all these places, and you know, why I haven't seen a single friend since last March, it's because I do have faith in the science, and I know that if I do my part, hopefully other people will do their part and will be able, you know, to eventually curb or stop this.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say that it's all peaches and cream this entire time. Like, you know this too. I got married during the pandemic, and my mom wasn't there. My in-laws weren't there. We got married alone.
Yeah.
And there's certain moments like that, like my friends who have given birth, for example, and who haven't, like, those babies haven't met their grandparents, you know, sometimes up until 6 months to a year. I know some people who haven't even met their newborn nieces and nephews, and none of it is fair. And honestly, none of it is okay. And I think it's okay to be mad about it sometimes.
Yeah. But what do we do about it? I mean, is it our job to do anything apart from sort of staying indoors? And I mean, it was kind of, it felt like a sort of blitz mentality where in the beginning, where everyone at 7 o'clock was banging on their railings and pots and pans and things. Mm-hmm. And everyone felt like we were in it together. But then it got really bad and they said locked down properly. And it wasn't 20 cases a day. It was
thousands of cases per day.
Yeah. And it got worse and everyone got kind of, I don't know, there seemed to be two sort of camps. One was kind of the really locked down, being very safe. And then there was the the ones who either didn't care or they're bored or they think they're better than that, or it's not going to affect them.
No. Well, I think the simple answer is, and this might not be the popular opinion, but I think it comes down to two things, selfishness and a lack of empathy. Mm-hmm. And this can be applied to everything that we talked about. So from the genocide in Palestine to COVID to, you know, like just the global state. I think it comes from, as soon as we detach ourselves from the larger global conversation and say things like, you know, one person can't make a difference, or it's only me, like, what can I do? I think that's probably part of the problem, because all of these efforts take more than just one person.
Mm-hmm.
For example, and then they've been saying this, like the language that they've been using around COVID, for example, is it's not just going to take one person or one vaccine to solve everything. Like, we really have to work together. And that's where the selfishness comes into it. It's that there are certain individuals who decide that the rules don't apply to them and they can kind of go out and do whatever they want. And that affects, unfortunately, the rest of us.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. And with the lack of empathy, I think that whether it was, again, the language going around right now is that everything happened, the genocide happening in Palestine. And again, this is not new. This has been going on for decades. If you can stand up for human rights when it comes to Black Lives Matter or stopping Asian hate, why can't you stand up for Palestine? And going back to all of these revolutionary social issues and social changes, it's not about what I can necessarily, or what I should be doing, or what I can be doing as an individual on a global scale. It's okay, how am I changing the conversations around me to the people around me, and hopefully shedding some light on a situation that they may not know about?
Yeah. I mean, on that, could you sort of give us a quick breakdown of what's going on?
Sure.
With the genocide and conflict.
Sure. So, and I will say the reason I call it a genocide in Palestine, it's because it has been going on for multiple decades now. Originally, the country of Palestine was, again, obviously, it was a country. It was just that. It was a place where people lived, and certain areas of Palestine, specifically Jerusalem, were always disputed land because certain religious groups, being Muslim groups, Christian groups, Jewish groups, felt that they had a religious claim to the land. So this is now taking a country, which is supposed to be state, and adding a religious undertone to it. Now, because so many different religions felt like they had a stake on this one particular part of land, certain religious groups came in and out of the country kind of at free will. Now, we're going to fast forward, you know, past that, just to about, let's say, even 50 years ago, especially after World War II, and certain people from various countries in Europe were seeking like refugee status and asylum. The Palestinian people opened up their borders and allowed certain groups of people to come in. Now, eventually, with that, the groups of people who were coming in, and again, I am very, very careful about saying Jewish people, because it's not just Jewish people. This is not a religious issue per se. It's a state issue. So the Israeli population that was coming in, or rather, you know, the Polish population and the rest of the Eastern European population that were coming in, they were establishing their homes and their communities. And eventually, when they established this, quote, State of Israel, which is, again, the name that they named the country, they were actually doing so on Palestinian land. And they, through very careful, not only military tactics, but also social tactics and governmental tactics, ended up pushing the Palestinians out of their own land, leaving them without security, without water and food, without electricity in a lot of cases. And it continued to push them to essentially the borders of what is now the West Bank and Gaza. So you have a native population similar to, you know, what Christopher Columbus did when he came to North America. He pushed the indigenous population out of their own land. A similar situation happened when groups from the rest of Eastern Europe and the area were seeking asylum, came into Palestine and pushed the population out themselves. Now, the language that you'll see being used a lot is that this is a, quote, like a situation or what is happening in Palestine. But it's not a war. This is not a war that's happening, because a war would assume that each side has a defense or each side has an army. The Palestinians don't have an army. They historically have never had an army. They don't have a navy. They don't have weapons, and they don't have a defense system. Whereas the attacks that are being done upon them are through rockets. are through heavy, heavy arms, are from people coming into the Gaza and the West Bank and infiltrating those areas and murdering children and civilians. So this has now become not an Israel versus Palestine issue or a religious issue. This has now become a human rights issue. And it has been for the last, you know, few decades. Mm-hmm. That is what is now officially coming to the forefront into the media. And now people are actually seeing what's been happening for years and years.
Right. So, I mean, thank you for
It's a good topic.
It's a lot. What could we as individuals in the other side of the world possibly do about that?
Well, from what I'm seeing, and again, I'm not an expert in this field at all. There are many nuances that obviously I didn't speak to or didn't mention. But what I will say and continue to emphasize is that this is not a religious battle or a religious war by any means. You have Christian Palestinians, you have Jewish Palestinians, and on the flip side, you have Muslim people, although the number is smaller, you have Muslim people and a very, very heavy Christian population in what is now known as Israeli land. You have Jewish people who are actively standing out and speaking up about the war crimes that have been done to Palestine. And right now they're saying, the Palestinian people are saying that the only reason that we are able to even see a little bit of movement in a possible direction, a possible ceasefire, is because social media is amplifying the issue so much. So what I can say right now is continue to amplify. Give those people a voice because they don't have one right now. So if that means that we're reposting statistics, we're really taking the time to learn about the deep, deep rooted conflicts in this area, that is what we have to do.
So you think that really helps, even like people on Twitter and things?
I do. I genuinely do, because you're giving voice to an otherwise silenced population.
That's interesting. Because there's a term called slacktivism where,
yes,
you know, people sort of, they're all up in arms for a day and they do a tweet or they do an Instagram story. And it's like, well, who are you talking to here? Mm-hmm. I mean, even to play devil's advocate, let's say that people are doing a protest or walk down in through Vancouver, like they were over the weekend, and they hold up traffic and, you know, of course they have to, because otherwise they're not going to get the press that they need or the attention. But, you know, as they walk past, they're saying, you know, start a ceasefire or stop the violence or whatever. And I agree with them, but then that's as far as it gets. Like it'll go to me or whoever's walking past. And I say, yeah, okay, stop. They should stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Sounds bad. Yeah. And then that's it. Like, as far as, you know, I was concerned, being a completely uneducated person on this topic, it sort of fell flat.
And that's fair. But I would say from then, it's now, well, you've kind of learned a little bit about it, but I would say even beyond this conversation, do your own research as well after this and see what's happened. And I think one thing that's really important to note, a lot of people have also been echoing the same statement. It's that in regards to what's happening in Palestine, like, please direct your anger and your frustration towards the Israeli government, not the Jewish community as a whole, because there's a lot of, you know, you can be pro-Palestine without being anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important distinction, because this is not, we're not attacking a group of people. That's not the point of this. It's trying to put very targeted pressure on a government that has been, you know, committing crimes of ethnic cleansing for decades.
And it's shocking that it, in this day and age, that kind of thing's continue, but I don't know, it's kind of, and it's an interesting thing where, like, there's a whole generation of people who, or not generation, but a lot of people who either they don't watch the news or they're not really tuned into what's going on around the world or whatever, and they hear about this through, let's say, somebody shared a tweet or a story or something, and they see it and they think, oh, this is awful. They don't know who to be angry at.
Mm-hmm.
And then even if they are angry, where do they point it?
Where do they point it? What do they do about it once they are?
Like, should they just retweet and then kind of call that a day and say, well, I helped?
Well, I think it has to do with different levels of activism. I personally am not a protester. Mm-hmm. For me, it's never really resonated with me. I've preferred to take action in different ways, whether it be like on the back end or where I can on a policy side or using my privilege and my voice to amplify an issue. For me, that personally feels like I'm making more of a difference. So I think to each their own. To someone who just does one tweet or one Instagram post and calls it a day, like, just know that whatever cause you're fighting for is grateful for that one tweet. Because you may be, even though you're not taking action from it, you may now be presenting some information to someone else who really could be that revolutionary figure, right? You never know who is seeing your material. So you know, if it's just one post, that's okay. And if you want to, you know, become, you know, the next Rosa Parks, amazing.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's sort of just keeping it going and don't let the volume go down.
And that's what I said. Do your best.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's all you can do.
Yeah. I mean, we're told from, you know, the moment we start, you know, competitively running against our schoolmates, like, you just have to do your best. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about winning. And that's all you can hope for is you do whatever you can in this situation. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to change the world. You don't have to fix all the problems that you see. You just have to do what you can right now.
Yeah. And I think back to your Venn diagram point, it's okay, what can I do and where can I do my best? And if I truly know that I'm doing my best wherever I can, I have to be content with that.
Yeah. And on that, I mean, it's sort of circling back to what we started and what we, why I sort of contacted you in the first place is, around mental health and feeling overwhelmed with everything that's going on. If it's, you know, if it's not a pandemic, it's a, you know, eardrum shattering storm that we had last night. Mm-hmm. To, you know, it's, there's always something happening.
There's always something.
And we can't control it. And I think, while it is very easy to be overwhelmed and feel like we're not doing enough because we haven't seen any changes today, and I don't know how we do this because I feel the same way. I'm often overwhelmed and I have medication for anxiety and depression and, you know, just in one handy tablet. But it's like I feel like sometimes there's just so much and I feel like every time I get a Slack message from my boss who says, can we have a quick Zoom chat? And I'm like, oh God,
you're like, oh, fired. I really can't.
And I felt that since school, like, James, can we have a chat? Uh-oh, I'm expelled.
It's just anxiety. Like,
yeah, of course it is. But it feels very real and that's the problem. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's because of social media or no thanks to social media, or it's the amount of news or it's the amount of coverage. And there's like every time I look something up, there's going to be swarms of killer bees coming our way, or this year there's going to be loads of forest fires. And, you know, it feels like the world's falling apart and I don't know how to fix it.
Exactly. And that's, again, that's going back to your diagram. Like, that's key. You can't, it's not that you can't fix everything. It's that everything has to be done kind of one step at a time. And it's the same reason why, and it sounds terrible, but it's the same reason why the Black Lives Matter hashtag and Stop Asian Hate hashtag did not happen at the same time. People can only handle so much. Mm-hmm. Especially with, and you can probably speak to this too, we don't consume news the way we used to. It's not like we can turn on the news for half an hour, get our update, and then move on with the rest of our lives. News and what's happening in the world is constantly inundating us because we are connected to our device 24/7. You can't escape it.
Yeah.
And that's also not great for our mental health. We need that reprieve in order to reset and figure out how we're going to move forward. We don't get that right now.
Yeah. I mean, I like getting my news from the quick monologues at the beginning of like Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers and stuff.
It's
like,
week tonight.
Yeah, it's like, tell me how bad things are, but make it kind of amusing and about 5 minutes long. because that's about what I can handle at the moment.
What I can take. I'm at capacity.
Yeah, you know, throw in a few jokes, call it a day, let's have some interviews. Yeah, I mean, so where do we go from here? Like, how do you feel now? But do you think we haven't really fixed anything?
I don't necessarily think one conversation can fix everything. It's definitely helpful to vent. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
But I think I just need to like unplug and reset and use all of my coping strategies that I have to rebalance, you know, my mental health, maybe go for a walk. Unfortunately, I'm not in Vancouver right now, as you know, otherwise I could just go for a hike in the mountains.
That would
be great. But I can go for a paddle this evening, and that usually makes me feel a little bit better. But I don't have an answer. And I know that's not what everybody wants to hear, but sometimes it's okay. Sometimes your answer just has to be, you know, I need to do a reset so I can be my best and take on the world tomorrow.
I don't think there is an answer. And that's what we need to stop looking for.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a solution. And at the end of a conversation, you're not going to necessarily feel better. Like getting it out and venting and shouting and, you know, screaming into a pillow sometimes, it helps. But there isn't an answer. There's no fix to things.
Yeah, and that's a great perspective. You don't necessarily need to fix everything all the time.
Yeah, or anything, any of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can control the small circle around you, whether it's by staying indoors right now, or if you're feeling cooped up like I am, like I don't think I've left my desk apart from to go to the kitchen to get snacks more often than I should have, then you sort of just take yourself out of that and perhaps I need to go for a walk. Actually, I'm about an hour away from my vaccine appointment, so I'm going to go in a minute. But,
oh, that's so exciting.
Oh, I can't wait. So, and then it's 3 weeks and then it's in my system and I can leave the house and shout at people for not wearing masks. But it's, you know, we can't control everything, anything. I mean, being a parent's taught me that. Like, I have no control over my daughter. As much as I, you know, threaten to take the iPad away, it doesn't matter. She's going to still whine at me, shout at me and slap me to wake me up. So, yeah, I mean, the answer is there is no answer. We don't get to control stuff. It's just we get to make our experience the best we can and hope that we affect someone else in a positive way.
Yes, and I think we have to be content with that.
Yeah.
I think for right now, that is the best we can do, and we have to be content. And in a year from now, we'll reassess, and hopefully the world will be in a much better place, and things will be open, and we can see our friends, and we'll have a whole different set of challenges to deal with then.
Sounds amazing. Yeah, something else will blow up or erupt or something. But until then, let's just hope for the best.
Yes, agreed.
Lovely. Well, I feel better now.
A little bit better. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, thanks for taking the call, Bisma.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.